listening to the World Teacher Programme for Share International New Zealand on Planet FM 104.6. Each Friday morning, we bring you information from the teachers of the Ageless Wisdom. The purpose of our programme is to introduce Maitreya, the World Teacher for the Age of Aquarius. Maitreya does not come alone. He brings with him the Masters of Wisdom, a group of highly evolved teachers. They work in many fields and can teach us the art of living, how to live in right relationship with each other. With their inspiration, we can transform our civilization, creating justice and peace for us all.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome again to the Maitreya program. Today we look at the very strange life of the Count of Saint Germain. The French writer Dominique Abdoul Noir has put together this article, and this is the first of three articles in the series. Much has been written and much has been dreamt about the Count of Saint Germain, this mysterious character who astonished Europe during the second half of the 18th century. So writes Paul Chacornac in the introduction to his biography, The Count of Saint Germain. One thing is certain, this extraordinary character did exist in the 18th century. He was in contact with the main leaders of the European court, Louis XV, and the King of Prussia, Frederick II, the Landgrave, Prince Charles of Hesse, ambassadors, ministers, and he was seen at the best salons, high society cultural gatherings with piano, singing, and tea, and so on throughout the 18th century. Numerous writings attest to his existence and his influence. The Gazette of the Netherlands, dated 12th of January 1761, writes, "The so-called Count of Saint Germain is an incomprehensible man of whom nothing is known, neither his name, nor his origin, nor his position. He has an income, and no one knows from whence. He has acquaintances, no one knows from where he made them, but he has entry into the cabinet of princes." Voltaire wrote to Frederick the Great of Prussia, "This man who never dies and who knows everything." And Blavatsky said of him, "A living mystery, a gentleman of magnificent talents and education, and the possessor of ample means to honestly support his standing in society. He claimed to know how to fuse small diamonds into large ones, and to transmute metals, and backed his assertions by the possession of an apparently unbounded wealth and a collection of jewels of rare size and beauty." The Comte de Saint Germain was certainly the greatest Oriental adept Europe has seen during the last century. And the Landgrave, Prince Charles of Hesse, wrote, and it might be it might be a good time to say here that Prince Charles of Hesse, or the Landgrave, was actually a student of the Count of Saint Germain during his later years. He writes, "He was perhaps one of the greatest philosophers who ever lived, a friend of humanity, wanting money only to give it to the poor, a friend also of animals. His heart was concerned with the happiness of others. He believed he could make the world happy by providing it with new pleasures and more beautiful fabrics, more beautiful colours at a much lower price. I have never seen a man with such a clear mind as his, and with such erudition, especially in ancient history, as I have rarely found. He had been in all countries of Europe, and I know of almost none where he had not made long stays. He knew them all thoroughly." And that was from memoirs of the Landgrave of Hesse. During his wanderings through the courts of Europe and Russia between 1745 and 1784, Saint Germain used several names which increased his capacity for action and added to his aura of mystery. Nobles would often use other names to travel incognito. For example, he called himself Monsieur de Sermont in Belgium, Count de Weldon in Leipzig, and Monsieur de Saint-Noël, when he appeared to the Countess of Adhemar. He was not, as some think, related to Count Claude Louis de Saint-Germain. He was a general in the French army who joined the Danish army in 1760 and fought against Russia at St. Petersburg. So he was on the other side. At the end of his life, Saint-Germain revealed his origin to the Landgrave of Hesse. He told him he had been born to Prince Rákosi Francis II, Rákosi of Transylvania, and his wife, and that he had been placed under the protection of the last Medici, the Grand Duke of Tuscany, Jean Gaston of Medici, who was 1671 to 1737, was the last Medici. According to the information given by Hesse, Saint Germain was therefore born in 1691 or 92, and he died 92 years old or 93 on the 27th of February 1784 at Eckenford in the state of Hesse, where he was buried. Alice Bailey and Benjamin Krem both confirmed the name Rákosi. The civil register of Eckenford contains the following lines: "He who called himself Count of Saint Germain and Weldon died here and was buried in the church of our town." In the first half of the 18th century, Europe was in a precarious position. No power seemed capable of dominating it. Alliances were being forged and unravelled. Nations did not yet really exist, and sovereigns considered states as patrimonial possessions that they could enlarge or exchange without worrying about the people or natural geographical limits. Europe was also part of an accelerated transformation of civilization, a consolidation of states and their administration, a proliferation of new ideas, of sciences, of politics, of techniques, and so on. The United Kingdom was a parliamentary monarchy. The Enlightenment was spreading throughout Europe, putting reason and knowledge rather than God and Europe at the centre of society and culture. And there were certain enlightened despots of Prussia, Russia, Austria, for example, supporting philosophers such as Voltaire and Diderot to increase their cultural influence. Religion, royal power, the foundations of humanity and human autonomy were being questioned. And at the same time, trade developed, particularly with the colonies and the triangular trade of slaves, which enriched a bourgeoisie, which produced, acted, got educated, dressed well, became interested in art, and also felt frustrated by the privileges granted to the titled nobility. The general population was often considered as only good for producing food, manufactured goods, for doing chores for the nobles, and paying taxes. They were subject to arbitrariness of the lords, to food shortages and epidemics, and there were popular uprisings which were suppressed in blood. These occurred periodically. In 1743, the War of the Austrian Succession triggered open conflict between Britain and France. In November 1743, Louis XV planned a large-scale invasion of southern England, which failed. That, then, is the backdrop into which Saint Germain made known his name. The first documents attesting to Saint Germain's presence in Europe date from 1745 and place him in England, although it is not clear what role he played there. Prime Minister Walpole's son, Horace, mentioned Saint Germain's presence in London for 2 years in a letter dated 9th of December 1745, where he writes, "He has been here for 2 years and will not say who he is, nor from whence he comes. He sings and plays the violin beautifully, and he composes. The Prince of Wales is insufferably curious about him, but in vain." We meet Saint Germain in Vienna in 1745 and 46, where he lived in princely style. Prince Ferdinand von Lobkowitz was his most intimate friend and introduced him to General de Belle Isle. De Belle Isle later introduced him to Madame de Pompadour, who was a favourite of Louis XV. She became enamoured with him and did indeed introduce him to the king, who enjoyed his presence. It is said Louis XV liked Saint Germain for his gaiety, his eccentricity, for his improbable stories from which the truth was not always excluded. Germain stayed in France from 1758 to 1760 at least. The Seven Years' War, which went from 1756 to 1763, was the first quasi-world war. In Europe, with Prussia and England on one hand, and France, Austria, the Russian Empire, and the Kingdom of Spain on the other, the war actually spread to North America and India. Great Britain and Prussia were finally victorious, but all the combatant countries were exhausted. From the correspondence of the ambassador of Affray in Holland, we know that Saint Germain was sent in 1760 to The Hague by Louis XV and General de Belle Isle, who was then the Minister of War, to secretly negotiate peace with Great Britain. Accounts show he was very active. At the same time as he contacted General York, Saint Germain became popular with the Amsterdam bourgeoisie, as well as signing a contract for the repair of hydraulic machines. In a letter to the Marquis de Pompadour of the 11th of March 1760, Saint Germain wrote some extracts. "Madame, my pure and sincere attachment to the king, to the good of your kind nation and to you. Also, in all its purity, in all its sincerity, and in all its strength." And he goes on, "You can give peace to Europe without the length and embarrassment of a congress." However, the peace attempt was stopped by Choiseul, who was General de Belle's enemy. Louis XV chose Choiseul's version and discarded Saint Germain. The ambassador of Affray in Holland publicly discredited Saint Germain and tried to have him imprisoned. He escaped from Holland in an astonishing way and tried to take refuge in England. However, he was returned to prison in Holland. Choiseul left the Foreign Office in 1761 and peace was signed with England in 1763, whereupon Saint Germain was pardoned. In a letter, her letter number 40, from the letters of Helena Roerich, Helena Roerich wrote, "There is no doubt that Saint Germain played an active role in Russian history. In international literature, there are brief references to prophecies he made while in the capital of Russia." Now, Peter III of Russia was an inconsistent neurotic, an unconditional admirer of Frederick II of Prussia. However, his wife Catherine loved Russia. She loved England, France, and the philosophers of Le Lumière, and she corresponded with Diderot and Voltaire. She overthrew her husband, Peter III, in 1762, with the help of the Orlov brothers, Gregory and Alexis. She was an enlightened despot, ruling from 1762 to 1796. She strengthened Russia, reforming and stabilized it. She promoted education and developed industry, but never really improved the conditions of the serfs. Pierre Lumière and Isabel Cooper Oakley, and an excerpt from Dickens' book All the Year Around, accurately describe Saint Germain's involvement in the Russian Revolution of 1762. And Baron de Glitchen, a former Danish ambassador, confirmed that Saint Germain was known and respected by the Orloff brothers. In the book Supermundane, in section 25, Roerich states that Saint Germain would have advised Kutuzov, the general-in-chief of the Russian armies. He was in 1745 to 1813, he was around, and he forced Napoleon to retreat. After Moscow and St. Petersburg, Saint Germain settled in Brussels, the capital of the Austrian Netherlands, under the name of Monsieur de Sermont. Madame de Nettin, who was the treasurer-in-chief of the Netherlands, financed a factory for him in Tournai, where he managed. His aim was to dye silk, wool, leather, wood and metal in very bright colours with simple ingredients. He disappears then for about 7 years and pops up in 1770 in Livorno, where with Alex Orloff, he was a guest who showed him great favour. We then see him in 1774, where he was a guest of the Margrave of Ansbach of Bavaria, under the name, he used the name Sarogi, where he lived a reclusive life. According to Baron de Glitchen, Gregory Orloff had told the Margrave, "Here is a man who played a great role in our revolution." In 1776, Saint Germain settled in Leipzig, Dresden, for only 2 years, and then returned to Moscow, where he founded a third dye factory in 1778, and then he returned to Prussia. In Prussia, he cured Madame de Troisel, who was suffering from epilepsy, and he regained the esteem of Frederick the Great of Prussia. In 1779, at the age of 88, Saint Germain insisted on meeting the Landgrave, Prince Charles of Hesse. The reluctant Landgrave resisted, but eventually invited him to his home. Saint Germain spoke to him of great things he wanted to achieve for mankind, of the embellishment of colours, of the improvement of metals, and there is almost nothing in nature that he did not know how to improve and use. The Landgrave said, "He entrusted me with almost all the knowledge of nature. I therefore made myself his disciple." Saint Germain died on the 27th of February 1784 and was buried in Eckernförde in Germany. When his grave was opened later, it was found to be empty. And the author says, many authors have written about Saint Germain, often spreading inaccurate information. Isabel Cooper Oakley, Paul Chacornac, and Pierre Lumiere referred to Saint Germain in original documents, quotes from ambassadors, from bills, from letters, and memoirs of contemporaries. Some points of his life were difficult to establish, and in these cases I referred to authors that I considered most reliable: Alice Bailey, Benjamin Krem, Helena Petrovna Blavatsky, Elena Roerich, and the Landgrave Hess. These give an accurate idea of aspects of his life, although his role was probably larger than described. So this article is from the April 2022 issue of Share International, and you can find Share International online at share-international.org. All going well, I'll have the second part of the trilogy in due time, but until then, look after yourselves and look after other people.